Welcome to the Joey Show. It's Joey Avery. Boy, oh boy, do we have a fantastic program for you today. It's a Thursday like any other, and we are going to be throwing straight heat. We've got some big stories that we need to cover today. Iran is attacking Israel. We have some World War III speculation. Caitlin Clark's salary came out, and Grimes had a Coachella debacle. What do they all have in common? Folks, we're going to find out. A special program today. We do not have a guest. Once again, we're rolling solo. We have things we need to talk about. We also need to eulogize the Golden State Warriors season and potentially championship run. We'll do that at the end. I know Bay Area sports isn't for everyone, but it is certainly for me. So fun program today. Roll it.
Thank God I have a podcast.
Okay, before we dive into our stories, before we do our news, sports, culture for the week, the stories of which I just previewed, you might be noticing a very special piece that I'm wearing, a very special piece of merch from my boys, my squad over at the Pentagon. That's right. Daddy got to go for a little Pentagon visit. It was something else. I learned a lot about the Pentagon. One thing in particular, I'm going to tell you from D.C.
Dude, there's a McDonald's in there. Did you know that there's a McDonald's in the Pentagon? I'm like, if that's not the most American thing I've heard. We have a food court in the Death Factory. That's fucking crazy, dude. That's America right there. It sounds a little depressing when you put it that way, but the thought that someone like murked Bin Laden and then was like, I'll have a McDouble. Kind of bricks me up.
Yes, folks, that is right. I got to visit the Pentagon. Quite a place. I was fascinated. I've always been fascinated by the place for a variety of reasons. I'm not necessarily a hoorah bricked up war guy per se, but I am fascinated in how the world works, and the Pentagon is certainly an example of that. Really fascinating experience. You get in. Let me tell you, the line getting in is an interesting place because everyone's a little on edge because you're going in and you got to go through security and you know, I better not have fucked up. I don't think that I have anything in my past, but it's just one of those things. It's like when a cop pulls you over, you're going through TSA and they're like, we got to check your bag. And then you're like, fuck, I don't have drugs in there, do I? And it's like, yeah, I haven't put drugs in my bag since I was a young lad. But you never know. You could have something in there. That's how I feel about my entire life whenever someone looks at it. And so it's horrifying. They're like, we're going to check your social security number. I'm like, oh my God. The first guy who checks it, he just said, oh no. And then looked at the person next to him. And I thought, I might not get to leave. I might live at the Pentagon now. I don't know what happens. I think you might have to, maybe you go underground and you have to suck off the jet. That's a lot. We don't have to do all that. But look, it was okay. His computer just froze. He gives me to the lady next to him and she looked it up. She said it was fine. She took my picture. She said it was the best one she took all day and that I should model. It's not really the point, but did I get hit on at the Penty by one of the officials there? Yeah, I did. Did it feel good? Felt great. Fascinating experience, though, just learning about the whole place. The Pentagon, I would say, it's like a big tech office. There are a few key differences. So I've been to a lot of tech offices. My first job when I was still open miking was I did sales recruiting in tech. So tech companies would bring us in and they would show us their whatever people were. They would show off their office and they'd be like, there's fucking cold brew on tap, dude. There's kombucha on tap. Like, you can set your own hours, but also you really can't. And like, you don't have to wear collared shirts. We're chill, you know? And so people would drink kombucha and they would sit in beanbag chairs and people would be playing ping pong back and forth. And that's not exactly the vibe that I got at the Pentagon. There was a different tone, but they did have a lot of activities. So that's, you know, their fun thing was apparently the center space of the Pentagon is the largest outdoor area where you don't have to take off your hat and salute a higher rank, which to me, that's their version of a beanbag. It hits a little different, but the premise is similar. It's like a Google campus. They're like, don't leave. Please stay here and work. And also, there are so many people of you here working, we can't have you going out at lunch hour. So they had the McDonald's, they had the Popeyes, they got Dunkies and Starbucks, depending on, you know, where in the country you're from. You know, they had a T-Bell. I imagine that the people in border security probably didn't go there. I don't know. Maybe they did go there. I don't know how it works, but it was fascinating. People are walking around in their fatigues. You walk in, you kind of see into a door and you'd see the command center room with the flags and what I would recognize only from HBO and Showtime series and things like that. Fascinating. Just interesting to be in the building. A lot of interesting things that I learned. I didn't realize it was made in 1941. That's interesting for a few reasons. It was made on September 11th, 1941. I clocked it. I don't know what sort of coinky dink that is. I'm not making light of anything here. That's gonna be a common theme in this episode because we're talking about some shit. But fascinating experience. Really enjoyed just seeing how it all works. And it's funny how over it everyone is at every job. We ran into someone, relatively high-ranking official there, and he was like, yeah, I bet you thought you were going to come see the power center of the earth, and we're out here just running around like a bunch of chickens with our heads cut off. I was like, no, sir, you're doing great, sir. Very interesting. Didn't get to fly a drone. Thought I'd check. Didn't work out. But it was fascinating to see, important to see. And I think one of the things that I took from it is I wanted to just put myself in people's shoes. You hear about our military spending. You hear about the people who run the government. But what are they thinking? What is it like to be day-to-day? Because, you know, for every, oh, my God, what an insane job, there's someone who's just sick of doing it. You know, show me a beautiful girl, I'll tell you a guy is sick of fucking her. It's a rude quote, but it applies to jobs. But it was interesting hearing how, you know, just asking questions and hearing how they think about things because, you know, they're playing a game. I'm wearing the merch. Go team. You know, hey, not saying I agree with everything that our Department of Defense has done, but in terms of general Department of Defenses, got to root for the home team, baby. And they are, they're competing. They're competing out there. Like, you couldn't use your phone, which makes sense to me. They don't want, you know, you taking pictures and stuff like that. But oddly, also, he was like, yeah, well, there's also a lot of shit on your phone that you wouldn't know about. I was like, what do you mean? And the guy that I was with said, he's like, well, you mentioned you travel. He's like, you said you went to Hong Kong. If you open up your phone there, they have all your shit, and they've put shit on there. And I was like, fucking what, dude? Huh? That's not what you want to hear. Has Xi Jinping seen my dick? Is he impressed? Kind of depends on if stereotypes are true. But the point is, scary. You know, I was asking, I was like, when you travel, do you, like, just, he's like, no, I'll try to bring a Wi-Fi puck because I don't want people having all my shit. I didn't realize everyone had everyone's shit. Is everyone looking at everything? Is that the price that we've paid for Alexa knowing when to turn on my favorite Carlos Santana song? That's not a great price. But on the same, and this is the argument other people will make is, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, who cares? And it's like, I don't know. Can both things be a problem? I'm not doing anything wrong. Also, don't have all my shit. But you have to realize the realities on the ground. The world isn't just what I want it to be and how I vibe it out. That was one of the things that I took away from that experience was looking at them and thinking about how they're thinking strategically. Everything that they're doing is based on, you know, 1,000 other factors. And then this is one of the most interesting things I heard while I was in the building, which was I asked someone, I was like, having worked within this region, you know, do you feel like you're harboring stuff? Do you know things that keep you up at night? Does it freak you out? And more or less, the only thing that was relayed back to me was just like, I don't trust anything. Because whatever is told to you is not necessarily what's happening behind the scenes. You know, every company has a product team and they have a marketing team. You can do your own extrapolations from there. Which does bring me to the first topic that I want to discuss today here in the news portion. A fun topic for a comedy show. Iran attacking Israel. Let's have some fun, shall we? Let's do a light program. The reason that I'm fascinated by this one, especially in light of my recent trip to the Pentagon, is when I saw this, I was like, oh God, this is horrible. Is World War III happening? I saw a lot of discourse about that. It's a scary thing when you read it. And then it seems to be that there have been some de-escalationary forces intact that kept it from going too far. Why do I bring this up? Why would I want to discuss something like this on what should be a fun and light program? Do I want to unwind the entire Middle East? Let's start at the beginning. Okay, so just fucking kidding. The reason that I found this interesting is because when I first saw the news stories, I had more of an emotional reaction to it. I was like, oh shit, stuff's about to start popping off, because you see things and it's like unprecedented attack, Iran's first direct attack on Israel. And then over time, things rolled out and it was like, well, Iran actually warned the United States, so they had to do this to respond to Israel's attacking of their consulate in Damascus, which is generally a no-no in terms of foreign policy, to directly attack a diplomatic building, although obviously within that diplomatic building, they're planning out things related to war and the proxies, the groups that they tend to wage their war on Israel with by supporting different groups. It's kind of like when your girlfriend, you know, sends her friends to send subliminal messages around what she wants you to get her for Valentine's Day. That's not exactly it. I would say that's not exactly it, but it, vibrationally, I would say it's similar. The point is, I wanted to think about things more strategically, because I find when I just follow the news, I watch a podcast, or God forbid, I turn on cable news, or I read an article, everything is about unprecedented, holy shit, this is happening, what could happen, blah, blah, blah. And I, after being in the building, I found myself wanting to think a little more strategically, because they had to know something like this was coming. They're thinking a few steps ahead. Let's play chess. Let's think about reality. Let's not just react emotionally. Let's think strategically. I found an interesting Twitter thread by Smug Doom Posting Publishing House. Not a massive account, like 15,000 followers, but some really interesting threads as all this was unfolding about what could potentially happen, what the scenarios are. It ended up thus far at press time. Who knows? Israel could start popping off. They're crazy sometimes. They are. It ended up seeming like scenario of nothing ever happens is probably what's going to happen. Anyway, here's what I found interesting. Was a little bit of a little insight into the Middle East. I thought the people coming to the Joey show, they probably want some insight into the Middle East. I think that's why you listen. And knowing my audience, that massive group, as I do, I'm going to give you just that. I found this interesting. I'm going to share it. The question is, why should things be escalated? The issue in the Middle East is that it is the region in the world where deterrence matters most. Okay? It's a neighborhood where actors whack each other with sticks. If one of them whacks you, you need to come back with a bigger stick and whack them back and harder to show you're serious, or else other people might start getting ideas about you. You don't want people getting ideas about you, no diddy. You don't want that. The issue is that if you whack someone in this region too hard with too big of a stick, they start believing that you actually intend to kill them this time. In this case, they come back with a gun instead of a bigger stick. See what's happening in Gaza as an example. Obviously, that's horrible. We're not going to talk about that. We're not discussing the human cost. We are thinking strategically, thinking like someone in that building. Okay? If you hit someone too hard and they think, oh, you're coming with us, they come back and go, gra-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. But other than that, what you're kind of doing is just saying, fuck you, don't fuck with me. If you fuck with me, I'll fuck with you back. I have to fuck with you back. That's why you do have to have some understanding of some fucking with you back going on. And I found that interesting. He goes on to say, That's why there's an observable tendency of actors to engage in a lot of chest thumping and promises of thousandfold destruction, but not that much action. It's about publicly communicating strength and establishing deterrence. Action must be reciprocal. Okay, and that makes sense. Something happened, they're going back and forth. But at the same time, even while they're attacking, they're basically going, this is as little as we can attack, but y'all need to chill the fuck out. We let you know, okay? We calmed down. So that's kind of, I found that to be illuminating because there are so many times in the news media where I'm like, you see videos and it's death to America. And I'm like, why is everyone being so mean? Like, I have a hard time. I really do have a hard time believing that catastrophic geopolitical, you know, world-ending things are going to happen, especially when the weather's nice. Like, I was caught up in this when it was kind of ugly out, but then I was really thinking about this yesterday. It was like 75 in New York. Oh, my God. I was walking through Washington Square Park. Blossoms were in bloom. People were playing music. I saw people were wearing Knicks shirts because they're in the playoffs and people are all excited for that. Anything is possible. Life is good. I was like, who's gonna fuck all that up? No one's gonna do anything. Life's too good. Now I realize that the mullahs, the whoever runs Iran and the war cabinet of Israel, we're not in Washington Square Park that day. I understand that. But at the same time, they don't want their shit fucked up either. I do think at a base level, most people are just trying to vibe. But when you scare people, they got to do shit. That is not my full analysis of the Middle East, but it was just a little illuminating that whenever I see stories and everyone is immediately making stuff out to be horrible, potentially world-ending, potentially catastrophic, a lot of times it's just strategic and it's based on the reality on the ground and the incentives of the people involved. I realize that's history 101, but it's easy to forget because I haven't been in history for a long time. So maybe everyone is just trying to vibe a little bit, okay? Maybe we all just need to calm the fuck down. And maybe we also need to realize the realities of incentives as they exist. Which brings us to our second story. Caitlin Clark's salary came out and people freaked the fuck out. Let's pull up Caitlin's salary here. It is not great. I will note, we'll put it up here. I thought the rudest thing about this was the photo they chose of her. I think she looks much better than that. This is not a woman thing. This is just, everyone wants a good photo of them, man, woman, whatever else. But boy, is that lighting just so rude to her. Also rude to her is the salary. Starting year, $76,000, moving all the way up to $97,000, 4 years worth over $300,000, but not a great salary. A lot of entry-level people doing better than that. You could be getting coffee and sucking your boss's dick at Goldman and making more than that, but what's interesting about it is how people react to it. People have lost their fucking mind, and it's possibly because we've had this debate over and over and over and over again, and people are educated enough on it that they know what they think, and the other side is making ridiculous fucking points to whoever you are, and so you're not even listening to what they are. That could be it, because we have these debates all the time. I would say I'm sick of the wage gap debate, but I'm not going to say that because I fight for the bitches. No, look, here's the deal. It's not a great salary, but there is some reality tied into it. Most importantly, Russell Wilson decided to jump in. Russell Wilson hopped in and tweeted, "These ladies deserve so much more. Praying for the day." Stop fucking praying, Russell. You dumb fuck. Venmo her. If you care. You got paid hundreds of millions of dollars to suck ass in Colorado. Okay, not literally, but I don't know. I don't know what he does. He's unlimited. He's unlimited.
I think I have an alter ego. His name's Mr. Unlimited. Yeah, you gotta be unlimited. You know, you gotta have a thought process of being unlimited.
Okay, if This is my main thing for people on every side of this debate. If you have a problem with it, do something. Don't just fucking be like, oh, that's bullshit. They deserve better. One, the reason they don't make more money is because the WNBA isn't profitable. It's already subsidized by the NBA because none of you motherfuckers are watching it. Me, I watch it all the time. I have 10 Sparks jerseys. I have a Liberty jersey. And I have all the other teams, whatever the other teams are, I have there. And I bet on it, too. I gamble extensively on women's basketball. And by gamble, I mean whether I'm going to get a bone. No, I'm just kidding. Here's the deal. It's a stupid debate for a variety of reasons. Number one, people who are just like, ugh, that isn't right, aren't doing anything about it. It's a real business that has real money involved. It's not generating revenue, so they're not getting paid as much. That's how it works. Secondly, if you do want to change it, there are good arguments to make. And the arguments aren't women deserve better. The arguments are, and this is, and actually, there was one intelligent thing that I actually read on this topic. And here's that breakdown. 40% of, this is where there's actual discrepancy that you could complain about. All told, 40% of all NBA league revenue goes to player salaries, while the NBA puts roughly 10% of all league revenue towards its players' salaries. Okay, so it's a smaller percentage of a smaller pie. Because of these disparities, WNBA players are pushing to change their compensation arrangement. Kelsey Plum, who plays for the Las Vegas Aces. I forgot about the Aces. That's so silly of me. It's actually the best name of any team in Las Vegas. Raiders doesn't make sense, already exists. Athletics, they're not even going to fucking move. Knights, first of all, fuck you. You're a fake, phony franchise. You've ruined the Sharks. Okay, we don't have to talk about it. She said, we're not asking to get paid what the men get paid. Good. We're asking to get paid the same percentage of the revenue shared. Now, as I understand, the WNBA is not profitable, but still, even revenue makes sense. So here's where it's going to change, and here's where things will get different. They are taking on new investment. You have to spend money to make money. I mentioned earlier in the episode that I used to work in Silicon Valley. That's how that works. You don't have to be profitable to get a lot of revenue and pay people more. They need more investors. People like Caitlin Clark coming in should up that investment. She will also make tons of money because she's going to get tons of endorsement deals. And if people do follow her from Iowa into the WNBA, I think some will. I think not as many because college sports already have a built-in fan base. Then the WNBA as a whole can get more, which means when they split up player revenue, everyone can make more. That's how we get there. The conversation online is just women deserve better. There is no deserve. There is figure it the fuck out, okay? The people who are really fucking you are the people who are running the league or the fact that no one's watching it, which makes it harder to get investment. Now that people are watching the college game, more investment. Now we're cooking. The point is, and this is why I find it similar, this is why I put these stories together. There's a narrative that hits in the media where we see something, we react to it, and everyone has a stupid, obvious, basic take based on all the shit they already thought. Deal with the facts on the ground, okay? Realize what's set up against you. Realize how you want to play the game. Realize how you want to play chess. Put on your merch from the Department of Defense and play some motherfucking chess. Russell Wilson, you bitch. You fucking weirdo. You're allowed to suck, and you're allowed to be weird. But you're not allowed to suck and be weird, Russell Wilson. Fucking loser. I will say this, and this annoys me a lot. She's making $76,000 in Indiana. Do you know what you can buy in Indiana for $76,000? She's going to have a private driver, a seven-story home, and a fucking butler. She lives in Indiana, dude. 76K in Indiana, king shit. She's going to be just fine. If you like it so much, watch it. If you don't care, that's fine too. But the same debate that we have over and over and over again is if things are based on sexism, not market forces. That has some sexism built into it based on the things that we prefer and like and how things have shaken out. everyone's trying to make money. Baseline. No one's ever giving it away for free. If anyone's giving you a salary, it's because they think they're going to get more off of you than that salary. That's across the board in every industry, no matter what. No one's doing this shit for funsies. Everyone's trying to fuck you. Figure out if you're going to take it. So, on to culture. As we're going to discuss market forces, we have a fun one here. What could be more fun than World War III? Well, let's go to Coachella, folks, because Grimes, a.k.a. Elon Musk's ex, had a bit of a problem out there. First of all, that's what she sounds like? We're having a technical error here. How did that person not figure out how to fix a software error or do math? She sounds like math. Bitch, you named your child a number. Do the math. You're skilled at math? You're not skilled at math? You named your kid a number! What are we doing, folks? If you don't know, Grimes, Elon Musk's baby mama or one of a thousand, I don't fucking know. Dude's, whatever, playing a historic game of hide the salami. Well, she was at Coachella this last weekend and had a bit of a technical issue. As you just saw, she was DJing and she fucked it up. Now, there's a few angles that I want to take here, okay? Because I know some of you don't care about electronic music. I like it. Some of you don't care about Coachella. I love it. 8 years in a row, one of the best to ever do it. People say one of the greats, haven't been back in a few years. Will I be coming out of retirement next year? Yeah, I think so. There's only so many more years left that I can even have serotonin replenishment as part of my little puzzle. So I think now's the time before it gets worse. Going to Coachella is a magical time. It's a beautiful time. A lot of you are like, ugh, that's gross. I could never not shower for a few days. I could never sleep there. I don't want those crowds. I don't like that music. Well, enjoy your fucking book. Okay? Some of us like to rage. It's okay. I'm not passing judgment on it. Some of us don't. That's okay. You're allowed to think we're degenerates and we're allowed to think you're losers. That's how the world works. I don't begrudge anyone for doing their thing, but my thing is better. For now. And then when I get old, like, I think my whole thing is that when I get old, which tends to happen every day, when I get old, I just want to look back and be like, boy, we sure did it. I don't want to be like 60 and like, how do I get back out there, you know? And maybe I will. When you see an old guy who's still getting it, that's kind of fun, kind of weird, kind of fun, kind of weird. Do your thing, find your thing. I think I'll golf. But what I find interesting is, here's what I actually want is when I'm old, I want to describe my previous life the way alcoholics and drug addicts do at like a AA meeting, you know, where they talk so, they're like, hey, I can never do it again. I'm done. Like, it's bad. It ruined my life. I can't handle it. You know, God bless, whatever. But then like they really want to talk about it. They're like, oh, we used to take acid and go pretend we were sucking Ronald McDonald's dick in the playhouse. And like, you don't even know about that. And I'm like, I don't. I sure don't. But good for you. You know, that's why I think things like Coachella are important. Like, I don't want to ever get to the point where I can't indulge in things anymore, where I feel like I'm addicted. But I do want to get to the point where I feel like I left it all out on the field. You know, I don't want to be giving my Hall of Fame speech as a partier going, I wish I could still do it. I want to just be like, I did it. Fucking raged. There's a great, well, there's a comic, fun comic, Sandra Risser, Bay Area comic. Great, great gal. I imagine still doing it. I haven't seen her in a while, but she, when I was coming up, we would be doing open mics and she would come up. She was significantly older. I was in my 20s. I would say she was in the high 70, low 80 range, but I don't know that for a fact. I'm just basing it off of her act, okay? If I misjudge that, I apologize. She had shakes at the time, and I think she fixed them, but she would come up and she would just be like, you know, I used to, we went to the first music festival. We went skinny dipping in the woods, boy. And I was like, yes, that's what I want to hear. Those are the stories that I want to hear. I've been fortunate. I've grown up in a great time. My grandfather, his war stories were war stories. He would actually tell me about war and going over and doing war, and that those were great stories. My war stories are going to be a little different. I'll be like, we were on acid and our tent blew over at Coachella. My friend thought he had to sneeze, but he shit his pants in a porta potty. True stories, both of them. You got to adventure. That's the thing. You have to adventure. Life is all about adventure. Maybe that's what this show is actually about. I thought this episode was going to be about the forces on the ground, grappling with reality, okay, realizing that everyone's playing a game and you got to play the game and understand it and you can't just react emotionally to things. No, it's about the great adventure. And maybe that's what Iran was doing. Maybe they saddled up 300 drones and said, let's have a fly. Looks fun when they do it near us. The Americans are always having fun flying their drones. How come they get to have all the fun? I want to get on the sticks. P1, I don't want to be P2. I want to be P1 today. We're going to Israel. And America said, hey, we got sticks too. And no one was hurt. Maybe that was a nice thing. That was a nice war, I will say. And I'm not being dismissive, but that was nice. Some rocket fire, some fireworks here and there. We shoot them down. Everyone gets back and they're like, we win. More of that, please. I'm sick of these decisive victories. Why can't we all just be nice and get along? Don't we all just want a vibe? Maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's what world leaders need to figure out. Maybe they need to go to Coachella. Why not? If they had to camp next to each other at Coachella, you can't tell me that these wars would still be going on. You can't. Of course, the first 2 days would be rough. It's the same. Every time you go, you're camping next to people and you're like, ugh, these people next to us, ugh, this campsite, their music's loud, they're annoying, they have a different fundamentalist religion than we do, and we all believe it so strongly that maybe we'll kill each other over it. That's how you feel at first. Day two comes around. Day three? My God, by day three, you've been partying, you've been dancing, everyone's feral, everyone's a wild animal. You love each other, you care for each other. You're coming over there, you guys want beers? If it's Iran, they might say no. I don't know if you're allowed to do that over there. But either way, you go over there, you bring an offering of goodwill, and all the suspicion that you had night one, it's gone by night three. And you want to know why? Because at Coachella, there are no borders. They're only tents. You have to get along. We need more of that in the world. Which is why it's such a travesty that Grimes fucked up her set at Coachella. This has caused a lot of debates, and I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty of DJing. Not that I even know how to do it, but I did figure it out for this. I realize that's not the most important thing. What we're going to talk about is the fight that it started in the DJ community. But briefly, to discuss what actually happened here, she had a technical issue where apparently if you're using the sync button, which is a very controversial item in the DJ community, a lot of popular DJs use the sync button, but a real DJ would do the mixing themselves. They would slow down a tempo so that the beats match. They kind of mix it together. Boom, here's your transition. That's kind of like at a base level what the art of DJing began as. But these new decks come out and they have a sync button. So you can basically say, I want this song to go to this song. Press the sync button and it syncs them up with minimal effort on your part. So it becomes very easy to DJ, which is why so many celebrities DJ. DJing has become the stand-up comedy of music, in that people who are already famous might just give it a whirl so that they can sell tickets somewhere and make revenue. It's like when a YouTuber who's never done stand-up is like, fuck it, I'm on a stand-up tour. And it's like, okay, this is just how we're going to monetize people in person. You want to go see Paris Hilton DJ? Okay. I thought we wanted to watch her fuck. But fine. We're watching these famous people DJ. Some of them know how, some of them don't. I don't know the nitty-gritty of it, but I do believe that Shaq is a good DJ. Shout out to Shaq. That cat's had 9 lives, let me tell you. That guy has done everything and done it at a high level. So, she fucked that up. And apparently there's some issue where if you sync things out of a certain BPM, then it will double tempo. So, without diving into it, because I'm not even the person to do that, that's what you were hearing right there, is the shit just double tempoed. Her response to it was, I want to apologize for the technical issues with the show tonight. I wanted to come back really strong, and usually I always handle every aspect of my show myself. To save time, this is one of the first times I've outsourced essential things like record box BPMs and letting someone else organize the tracks on the SD card. I had a bad feeling. Blah, blah, blah. The big lesson for me was mix of, if you want it done, do it yourself. Two, be a cunt. Even if people feel bad. Well, why did you make me say it? That's fucked up. I'm not Australian. I think with the haircut, I can get away with it. Look, I was quoting Grimes. I don't know if that's one of those slurs where you have to be one to say it. Maybe she is one. I don't know. I think she is one, considering that she's just blaming outsourcing. But what do we think Elon Musk's girl, ex, whatever, baby mama was doing? You think she's not outsourcing? Of course she's outsourcing. That's what they do, baby. It's all about efficiency. She's not dialed into the nitty-gritty. She says she will organize them all next week. It is interesting because her current boyfriend is Anima, who is part of Tale of Us. Again, if you're not in the EDM space, you won't get it. Big act, actual DJ, played Coachella as well. Didn't seem to have any of these issues. So here's the interesting thing. Again, she named her kid a number and she couldn't figure out how to make the beat sync. Figure that the fuck out. Two, she Joe Coyed it. Fascinating move. Even given the time to do it, she just was like, yep, I'm going to blame the person that helped me. Which is an interesting move. And three, and this is where I think it ties in with everything else, the DJ community that's very mad that Coachella has given a space to someone who is not an actual DJ, right? Like, there's a lot of debate on this. The response to that, some people are saying, okay, well, even some of your favorite DJs who don't have these issues use the sync button, okay, and Recordbox and all these whatever softwares that help them, especially if their stuff is set to lights and visuals. A lot of it is not done live, so calm down. A lot of people do this. But other people are saying, you need to be better than that. There are tons of DJs who live DJ who should have this experience, so watching someone screw up a very basic part of DJing on the Coachella stage is annoying, and Coachella, that's bullshit. You should give that to someone who rightfully deserves it. And while I understand and vibe with the sentiment of that, it's the same argument that is happening in the Caitlin Clark salary, okay? And it's the same issue that's happening in everyone's reaction to things that happen overseas. The real question is, what are the details on the ground? What are the, what is everyone's goal? What is everyone's incentive? That's the word. Guy's trying to do a solo podcast. He can't remember the word incentive. Incentives matter. Coachella does have a lot of people who satisfy the EDM community who, and I guess that would be different than the DJ community, but that would be a whole nother weeds that we don't have to get into. They do have people that are strong DJs, and they also have people that are big artists like Grimes that has a DJ component, but she also makes her own music. It's not like she's Paris Hilton up there. All respect to Paris. Okay, the GOAT. But it's basically, look, the reason that they book people that are not all deep in the DJing world is because those are the shows people want to see. Coachella has two duties. One, to protect their status as a great place for music that satisfies the music nerds and the casuals alike, and two, getting people to buy fucking tickets. And people like Grimes. There were a lot of people at that show. And the interesting thing, and this is where we really get juicy, That show is going to be massive next week. This has generated more buzz than anything else that happened the entire weekend of Coachella. So some people think this is a conspiracy. Now, that's fascinating to me. Okay, I tend not to think that people who work really hard on their craft would want to intentionally fuck something up and be made to look a fool in front of everyone, especially when they do care about this, which she does seem to. But also, hey, she's tight with Elon. She knows how to, she has her thoughts about the media. She knows how to play it. She knows what she's doing. She's a bit of a performance artist. She posted her apology on X, helping Dada out. Could she be fucking all this up? It's a surprisingly novice move for someone who has played as many shows as her. And her excuse is, I let someone else do the work for me. That's interesting. Okay, I think that's going to do it for, hold up. I just got a news report that happened as I was about to wrap up the news sports culture segment here. Elon Musk has a daughter, has a child named X. I didn't know that. I was just talking about Elon on X. Dude, the fucking machines are listening to us. Lil X has become both prop and emotional support human. Oh, I see. This is, X is the, is short for XAEA12. Maybe Iran should bomb him. Look, I'm not saying that, I've never been anti-Elon per se. I've never been an Elon stan. But we have rules in our society. And naming your child that is not one of them. And I know that the cool guy thing to say would be like, yeah, fuck your conventions, fuck your... There's a reason we do things. Okay? That's a disgrace. Stop doing that. I don't like it. Okay? And all this distraction, all this, every time a goddamn teacher's like, sorry, you guys invented a letter. What am I supposed to type your child's name in when I'm doing the goddamn report cards? Maybe if Grimes was more focused on doing her actual fucking job instead of dealing with that bullshit that was brought on by both of them, I assume that's their kid, this shit wouldn't happen. Figure it the fuck out. I thought Coachella, like I said, I think Coachella has the power to heal people. Maybe we bring all the world leaders there, we sit them down. Okay, give them a little this, a little that. Maybe they microdose. Maybe they vibe. Maybe it works out. But Grimes was there, and it didn't seem to fix her, did it? Okay, well, I've had about enough of that. Here's what we're going to do. Final segment of the day. I know this is a different episode than some of the other ones, but folks, we're early on in the pod here, and I really want to try a lot of things out. So, like I said, write in, tell me what you're liking, tell me what you're not. The email for that is joeyshowpodcast@gmail.com. Write in any of your soapbox rants from last week. I'd love to hear them. And of course, come see me on tour. We do have more show, by the way. We still have our Warriors eulogy. But come on down and see the boy on tour. We have a ton of great shows coming up. Arizona is next weekend, April 27 and 28. Norfolk, May 2nd and 3rd. Fargo, May 17, 18. I might do a pop-up show in Paris. Folks, we don't know yet. Dallas Comedy Club, June 14 and 15. Mic Drop, San Diego, July 12th and 13th. Comic Strip, Edmonton, October. Could have some Vegas coming, folks. Could have some Chicago coming. Other things could be coming down the line. But what's coming up next, I was sad last night. I'm gonna grab my AirPod. 1 second. All right, guys. So if you don't know, the Golden State Warriors, one of the greatest franchises in basketball history, met their untimely demise last night in the first round of the play-in series to the Sacramento Kings, which, shout out to all the good people of Sacramento who come out to my shows, who support me. I'm happy for you. I'm happy for your city. I always say Sacramento doesn't get enough love. It is a second-class city. The Bay Area is better. And so it is tough when you lose to street trash like that. So I'm not lashing out. when the Niners lost, I took it well. If you remember episode one, I went to a forest and a river. Some people call it some trees and a creek. Doesn't matter. We mourned the loss of the 49ers, and I didn't have that luxury of the beautiful outdoors. And quite honestly, while this sucked, wasn't as painful as the Niners in the fashion that they went out, and the Warriors have been so successful. So I wanted to do something a little bit nicer, but whenever a Bay Area team goes out, we do have to mourn them, or one of my teams, I should say. And so I decided to have ChatGPT write me a poem in the form of a eulogy for the Warriors season. So I have not read this yet, but I did find a sound that I think will complement it, and I think this is something that we can all just kind of deal with together. And I think it's going to be meaningful for me, and I hope it'll be meaningful for you too. And I hope ChatGPT did a good job. So this is for the Golden State Warriors. And Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Steve Kerr, one of the greatest franchises on earth. We're sorry, but we remember you. We always will. And we're going to remember you this way. In the land of hoops, where legends rise, where warriors clash beneath the skies, there lies a tale of dreams deferred, a season slain, its cries unheard. Golden State, once mighty, bold, their prowess shimmering, a tale untold. But fate, it seems, had other plans. As Sacramento Kings, they took their stand. With swiftness and grace, they moved as one. Their passes crisp, their shots undone. The Warriors, they fought with all their might, but the Kings, they danced in the moon's soft light. In arenas filled with echoes of roars, Sacramento claimed victory, opened new doors. And as the final buzzer rang its toll, the Warriors' season met its solemn goal. But let us not mourn this passing so dire, for in defeat there's still a fire, a flame that burns with lessons learned, a promise of glory yet to be earned. So here's to the Warriors, brave and true. Though this season's end brings shades of blue, they'll rise again like a phoenix. They'll soar, for champions are made in battles won and more. Rest in power, Golden State's illustrious name. In the annals of basketball, you'll forever claim a legacy forged sweat and pain until we meet again on the court's hallowed terrain. Wow. I can't believe that timing was perfect. All right, folks, that's the show. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week. Breathe in, breathe out. Namaste. Thank God.